This is Kelly Blewett. We're here with Jennifer Cheverini, author of the New York Times bestselling Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, to discuss her latest work, Mrs. Lincoln's Rival. Welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's great to have you. This book is about Kate Chase. Can you tell us just a little bit about her?
Oh, there's so much to say. When you take on a figure like Kate Chase, it's hard to say just a little about her. I was really fascinated by her. I discovered her while I was researching Mrs. Lincoln's Dressmaker, and I needed to know a lot about Mary Lincoln's time in Washington during the Civil War. And it really intrigued me to discover that she had this political and social rival in the brilliant, dazzling, beautiful Miss Kate Chase, the daughter of Secretary of the Treasury Chase. And the two women had so many values in common. They both were very brilliant. They were considered excellent conversationalists and very politically savvy. And they both were women who favored the same political party. They were both loved the young Republican Party at that point, and very much for the Union, very strong abolitionists. But despite these shared values, because they were both heavily invested in the political careers of the men in their lives, who were both competing for the same prominent position as president of the United States, they had this rivalry of their own as they both sought to advance, in Kate's case, her father's political fortune, and of course, Mary, her husband, Abraham Lincoln.
And the relationship between Mr. Chase and Mr. Lincoln was fairly complex, not just because they were both rivals, but also because Mr. Chase was part of Lincoln's cabinet.
Absolutely. They both were in competition for the 1860 Republican Party nomination for president. And Mr. Chase thought that he was a good secondary choice if people didn't want William Seward. But Mr. Lincoln had this warmth and this gregariousness, and he used that to his advantage to win the favor of delegates from all around the East Coast and everywhere else, whereas Mr. Chase was more reserved. He was very devout and pious and not as effusive and friendly as Mr. Lincoln was. So people saw him as a little more standoffish. People were impressed with his brilliance and the way he did his work, but Mr. Lincoln inspired admiration, affection, and love. And so when it came down to it and people thought William Seward was too radical to be the Republican nominee, and they needed a second option, Mr. Chase hoped he would be that person, but Mr. Lincoln came from behind and surprised almost everyone by winning that nomination. But part of Lincoln's celebrated brilliance as a leader and as a statesman was that in a position where other people would use that new authority to settle old scores and remember old grudges, Mr. Lincoln knew that with the challenges the country faced, he had to pick the best people for these cabinet positions, regardless of whether they snubbed him once in a legal suit or if they contended with him for the nomination. He put those personal ego issues aside and he approached the best people. And that's why his cabinet was full of people who had contended with him for that nomination, including Mr. Chase.
You talked about how Mr. Chase was seen as being reserved as opposed to Mr. Lincoln, who was warm-hearted. In some ways, it seems as though Kate Chase, our protagonist, tried to make up for her father's reservation by becoming his sort of social counterpart.
He was very fortunate to have such a political partner as his eldest daughter. He suffered a lot of personal tragedy. He was three times married. He lost all three of his wives. He had six daughters, only two of them, Kate and her younger half-sister, Nettie, survived much into childhood and into adulthood. So when you were a political man at this time, you needed to have someone running your social career, handling your correspondence, setting up all those important dinners and receptions where political deals and alliances were forged. And whereas he was considered more reserved and not as outgoing and extroverted as the politicians we typically assume are, Kate made up for all of the deficiencies in that expressed warmth. Mr. Chase certainly did have compassion and empathy and love for his daughters and passion for his work, but he didn't always express it in a very visible manner, whereas Kate was intelligent and charming and graceful and beautiful And she really knew how to keep a conversation going. She made important alliances and introduced people to one another who she thought ought to know one another. And so she did really provide that wonderful counterpoint to his reserve. And she fell into this role just beautifully. And she's very, very eager to take it on.
Yes. And in some ways, as we meet Kate, she's in a sort of liminal position personally. She's this young woman who is connected to her father socially, and she's single, but she's also this sort of budding flower that many men about Washington are interested in pursuing. And there's a lot that you explore there with how she sort of wonders whether she should delay romance so that she can be her father's kind of helpmate during this time. But at the same time, some romance seems to begin. And I wondered if you wanted to speak a little bit to William Sprague.
Yes, it was a very difficult position for Kate because it was her life's ambition to help her father achieve his life's ambition of being president. And it wasn't just because she wanted to help him achieve his dreams. Since she was his official hostess, if her father became president, she would be first lady. And this was a role she wanted very much. And of course, this is part of where the rivalry came in with Mrs. Lincoln, because she knew Miss Chase coveted that role and she was in no hurry to give it up. So she was in a quandary when she was very much admired because she had so many of these wonderful personal qualities. She had many suitors, many male admirers, but she did not want to give up that very important role in her father's life that she had enjoyed for so long. But she couldn't help falling in love when it finally happened. And I would argue with the wrong man, unfortunately. So many brilliant women then as now fall in love with the wrong men. And it happens the other direction as well. But she was in a difficult position when her affection was returned and when she and William Sprague were considering marriage. She was reluctant, as much as she loved William, she was reluctant to marry because she still wanted to be that official hostess for her father. And eventually the three of them worked out an arrangement that suited them all in some ways and created some strain in others. But Kate usually found a way of getting what she wanted.
And that's part of the pleasure of the book, is seeing how her determination plays out across multiple situations. And I really enjoyed reading it. Could you tell us a little bit about the dynamic between Kate and Mrs. Lincoln?
Well, they had a lot in common. They shared so many values, but there was a certain degree of jealousy going in both directions. Kate was in her early 20s when she arrived on the scene in Washington, and Mrs. Lincoln was in her early 40s. Kate came in and everyone admired her style and her grace and her beauty. And that's the sort of admiration Mrs. Lincoln wanted and wasn't getting. By default, as the wife of the president, she was considered as the highest woman in the social hierarchy. And yet it was Kate that everyone wanted to talk to. It was Kate that all the young gentlemen wanted to dance with. So there was envy in that direction. However, from Kate's part, Mrs. Lincoln had that one prize that she wanted so badly. She had the White House. So they both had something that the other desired. And I think how wonderful it would have been for both of them if they had been able to set aside their differences and focus on what they had in common. I think it would have been great for both of them if they had been able to become friends. But because they were both very competitive, driven people, and they believed that one could only thrive at the expense of the other, which I don't necessarily think was the case, they really weren't able to forge any kind of friendship. And it did turn into a case of trying to get gossip about the other person and etiquette slights about who should call on whom. Things that, like today, that we might think are inconsequential, but in Washington society were considered very important.
Many of our listeners might know that Mary Lincoln has been a controversial figure that biographers have explored and taken different stands about, maybe even had a little bit of a bad reputation among biographers. But you write that Kate Chase is the same way, and in some ways this book offers a different glimpse into Kate than the biographies. Could you tell us a bit about that?
And this is something else that the women have in common, which of course they didn't know because the stories tended to come out after they passed away. But in both of their cases, the people who were most willing to tell stories about their relationships with these women, whether they were in the White House or elsewhere, tended to be the people who had an axe to grind. The people who loved Mary Lincoln and the people who loved Kate Chase wanted to respect their privacy and weren't as forthcoming with all of the insider tales and all the inside gossip. They preferred to just not say anything and maintain a nice dignified silence. But the people who were angry or who were jealous or who had felt slighted or snubbed, they were all too willing to come forward with their stories, which, you know, varied on a scale from truthful to entirely invented. And so on both cases, for both women, a lot of the biographies, especially early ones, tended to be dramatically negative and portray them in ways that were very unflattering, and I would say unfairly so, emphasizing the negative, relying on gossip instead of what's documented in the historical record. Recently, Mary Lincoln has been addressed by more recent scholars and more recent biographers, and they've given her, I think, a more fair consideration. Kate Chase has not yet received that quite so much. So the early biographies tend to be extremely critical and unfair, and labeling as facts scenes to which there were no witnesses, which should point to the fact that they're invented. There's one particular element from a biography where Kate Chase is sitting alone in a carriage and she's supposedly watching Mary Lincoln. And the biographer writes, "Her green eyes narrowed with malice." Well, first of all, most people say her eyes were hazel, but she's sitting alone in a carriage, so we don't know if her eyes narrowed at all, much less with or without malice. But these are the sort of things that were presented as facts. And so she was not fairly treated by the writers who were addressing her life soon after she passed away, which is why I prefer to rely upon primary sources, newspaper accounts of the time, and the wonderful letters, the treasure trove of letters within the Chase family. They were marvelously prolific letter writers. So we have letters that the sisters exchanged when they were away at boarding school or at home, letters from the father to the daughters and the daughters in response. And this gave me a wonderful sense of the family dynamic and a much more equitable, I think, perspective on Kate's personality than the people who envied her were able to give to her biographers.
I'm sure that listeners like me will be very glad to pick up this book and read a little bit more about Kate Chase, Mrs. Lincoln's rival. Again, we're here with Jennifer Cheverini. Thank you for being with us today, Jennifer.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
For more information about this book or a link to where you can purchase it, please visit our website at wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, this is Kelly Blewett.